You are now listening to the Soul Trader podcast, music, creativity, and other plans, with your hosts, Simon James Betts and Corey Stewart.
Welcome back for another week. It's the Soul Trader podcast.
You beauty.
We've got Charlie the studio dog here again, if you were listening last week, who's now decided he wants to investigate how to get out through the curtain
Through the curtains.
That's
the curtains?
Helping with the echo. He's got his face all buried in it.
That's anyway. Right. He's okay. As long as he doesn't start barking or anything like that, he won't cause too much
issues. We'll find out. But anyway, this week's podcast, I don't know, what was the kind of, was there a title we kind of had for this?
Oh, I think this podcast is going to feature both of our experiences, either singularly or together on the live stage, and it's lessons learned.
I was going to say, if that's the title, it's a bit long.
Oh,
lessons learned.
No, I was giving you a little bit of an intro. I wasn't necessarily saying what the title was.
You were giving the first paragraph.
Although it would be, well, one, I would use up the word or letter count.
The character limit, yeah.
The character limit. And two, my fingers would hurt.
Halfway through the sentence, it would just go, that's enough.
It would just be like, I'll stuff you, Jack.
Dot, dot, dot.
That's right. But no, lessons learned, sort of... experiences on the road.
Maybe that could be a tactic, is that all your titles of all the podcasts could be like this sentence, and just as you're starting to get the juicy bit, it can just be dot, dot, dot. People go, I have to listen to the podcast now because I need to know the end of this sentence.
I would imagine people wouldn't be reading the title of a podcast if they didn't have the intention of listening to it, though.
Oh, no, sometimes you go through a list.
No, I suppose,
people listen to random.
Yeah, I suppose.
Like our podcasts aren't like, you know, it's not like... Every podcast has the same amount of listens and,
true,
you know, it's random ones and they go, oh, that one looks interesting. I look through people's podcasts and go, hey, that's an interview with somebody I like.
Mm.
I'm definitely listening to that.
Yeah.
So I'll look up, you know, interviews with, you know, Jimmy Carr or other people, Stephen Fry, for example, you know, because they're interesting listening to them chat.
Yeah.
So I don't care who's interviewing them. It's usually pretty entertaining.
What about if the Wiggles was interviewing them?
The Wiggles were interviewing.
Oh, that would be fascinating, wouldn't it? The Wiggles interviewing Stephen Fry.
Or Jimmy Carr.
Jimmy Carr.
He's generally fairly crude at times. So it would be an interesting one. But.
Enough of that.
Lessons learned. It's not about our experience on podcasts. It was more about our experiences, as I think you were saying in the intro, is with live performance. And, you know, I think as a performer, you're probably going to start in smaller situations. It's probably going to be pubs or...
Open mics.
Yep, wineries. It could be support gigs where you're supporting somebody else. So we just thought we'd kind of chat about some of the...
Well, you'd be hitting the support gigs, I suppose, if you sort of move up a couple of rungs on the,
certainly
the pecking order.
Certainly,
I mean, if you're just starting out, I mean, it'd be pretty bad, wouldn't it? You know, someone's first gig is, you know... supporting Ed Sheeran or something like that, and you know, he's only sort of grabbed a guitar chord book and learnt the guitar for a couple of years, and here's you and I spending decades on it, and it's like, well, fuck you.
Walks out with his music stand.
Walks out. Yes.
Or his mum brings his music stand.
His mum brings his music stand, yeah.
There was a competition, though, for there was a competition for Dean Lewis to support him. You had to...
Who? He was... Sorry, I know who Dean Lewis is.
You had to sing a verse for one of his songs.
Right.
And it was really interesting because the first person I listened to, he sang a verse and then sang the chorus and then you had to sing a verse.
Right.
And the first person I listened to sang the next verse.
Yep.
And I thought, oh, is that what you're doing? But then with things like TikTok, you can see the original clip.
Yes.
And then you can see all these duets that are happening. And we're completely off topic here, but anyway.
I will get onto it.
Interestingly enough, all the other ones were people just, you know, just making it up as they went along?
Right.
Just
who got the gig?
I have no idea. So they, you know, they were just, and I thought, are you just meant to make up a melody and lyrics, or are you, and show that you're creative, or are you meant to just show you're a good singer? And it wasn't clear. He didn't say, sing. I thought he said, sing the next verse. You know, it's your turn.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, you just sing the next verse. But then everybody was just all over the place, all over the map. It was completely random.
Yeah.
So anyway.
It would be interesting to know who got the gig, though.
Yes,
you know,
yes.
Was it the person that sung the next verse of the particular song that he was singing, or was it someone that just, you know, creatively, sort of reimagined what the next verse would be?
I would say it's probably the person with the most TikTok followers.
Yes.
The most re-watches. That would narrow it down. It would be narrowed down in some way and then selected from there probably. I mean, I can't imagine. The trend these days is to get people who have big followings, so I would have thought that that's probably the way they'd go. But but anyway, so that person could have been complete amateur hour and, you know, supporting a big artist. But
yeah.
I could look that up, but I don't care. there's a bit of a step between open mics and support gigs, but there's obviously support gigs at a whole range of levels. There's Ed Sheeran, but then there's also bands who play locally. I mean,
for sure.
You know, and sure, so yeah. Support gigs come in all kind of shapes and sizes. Usually, you know, like if we did, you know, a gig just locally, we'd obviously at the Fringe we didn't, but, you know, a lot of gigs we would have a support act. You know, you'd have somebody come in and, you know, warm up the room.
Yeah. I suppose with every type of gig, you know, every gig type, whether it is an open mic or down at the pub or at a purpose-built venue or at a winery or depending on the venue and depending on the type of gig, that there's a certain amount of... And this is one of the lessons that I've learned in my many years of performing, is that there are sort of unspoken sort of etiquettes, you know, unspoken things that it's preferable for you to do or to demonstrate, which enables you to be in favour of the people that are, you know, running the venue or booking the gig, so you get callbacks rather than just play once and never play again. Not a very sustainable way to, you know, put forward a professional music career, but if it's just one gig only. But the thing is that say with an open mic, for instance, you know, you make sure that, and I say this with a lot of experience because I've, you know, run open mics for many years, not now, but had, and if the open mic requires you to do a certain thing, like you know, it's an acoustic open mic, say, and there's 15 minutes or 3 songs that you play, don't overstay your welcome. Make yourself known early. Make sure that you're tuned up and all that sort of stuff, and you're ready before you get on stage. And once you're finished, don't piss off and go home. Stay for the whole night, you know, and see everybody else and support that community, you know. So
and certainly stay as long as you can.
Well, as long as you can. I mean,
like if you're in early because you have to get to bed early.
Yeah, Well, that's fair enough.
But give your excuses. I reckon actually give your excuses when you perform. You know, so if you're finishing up and you say, you know, looking forward to a good night, I'm not going to be able to hang around all the way to the end, but I appreciate, you know, the opportunity to be up here. I always think that's kind of nice to kind of, you know, I've got to work in the morning kind of thing. You're kind of saying, hey, look, if I'm not here at the end, I apologise.
Yeah.
It's definitely worth hanging out. And I think that I was going to say the time limit thing, it's interesting actually, open mics and, you know, support gigs have some probably more overlap in some ways than, say, a winery or a pub gig.
They're very similar. You do have a finite time.
Yeah.
And the reason being is that there's, you know, another band or another act that's coming after you.
Yeah.
And it's the night is solely dependent on the goodwill of everyone that's concerned. to try and stay to the time frame. Otherwise, it just blows right out.
Yeah.
Or people miss out, you know, in the case of an open mic, for instance.
Yeah.
But anyway, sorry.
No, I mean, continue. I think that the sticking to time is a hugely important thing. I was going to say, you were saying about, you know, if you depending on how you conduct yourself, whether you get invited back, it should be noted that blowing the headline act off stage and getting fired because of that is perfectly acceptable.
Oh, it's great press.
If you're better, excuse me, if you're better than the headline act and they want to get rid of you because you're kind of showing them up, hasn't happened yet, but I'm just saying that if you do that, that's fine. Case. That is absolutely fine.
Yeah, I mean, that actually just provides much more publicity. You can make so much mileage out of that.
Yeah. But don't get the publicity because you trashed the stage or something before the headline act. But yeah, the sticking to time thing is, I've always been a stickler for that. I mean, I've been to open mics on occasion where I know that I've overstayed my, or I've overrun my time, or I've done three songs or whatever, and the person running it's gone, do another one. And I'm like, no, I'm good. There's other people waiting, you know. I'll hang around. If there's time at the end, I can do another one.
Yeah.
But not now.
Yeah.
And I remember at the charity concerts in the UK, the Francis Dunnery charity concerts that were happening prior to COVID coming along and messing it all up, you know, there I had like a 15-minute time slot.
Yeah.
But the other thing to remember is that you've got a 15-minute time slot, but that's your time slot. You know, you really want the other person to be able to, in that situation, you want them to be able to start. If you're starting on the hour and they're meant to start at quarter past, you want them to be able to start playing at quarter past.
Yeah.
And they're going to have to get up there and plug in, and you're going to have to get off stage, and they're going to have to quickly, yep, we're ready to go. And obviously with those ones, you've sound checked prior, so it's a little bit different to an open mic. But I remember finishing one of those and just did my three songs, got the crowd into it, you know, had a bit of a laugh with the crowd in between songs, mm-hmm. played my last song, you know, walked off stage and just said to somebody, that's how it's done, you know, because it was just... Because it's just like, boom, there you go.
There's your
time. You want it done in 15 minutes?
Yeah.
Done.
That's how you do it.
You know, with a little bit of time to spare. They just laughed.
Yeah.
But it's just, you know, that's always been my thing is, it's like if I go 2 minutes, if there's on those bills, there's, you know, sometimes three acts or something like that before Francis plays. And if every act runs over by a little bit, it's a snowball effect.
That's right.
And you don't want the headline act to be going, what the hell's going on?
Yeah.
I was expecting to be going, you know, I G'd myself up to be going now. And the same thing with the open mic. Obviously with an open mic you might have 20 acts, I don't know, you know, across a night.
Mm-hmm.
And if everybody goes, you know, if everybody goes 3 minutes over, it's an hour difference at the end of the night. And that's the, you know, that just that snowballing effect of it getting worse and worse. So you think, oh, I only went a little bit over. Not acceptable.
Mm.
And so I would prefer to say, no, I'm good. Like I've done my time and, you know. And also the thing at an open mic, I always think that it's not your gig.
Yeah.
So a support gig, it is kind of your gig to a degree, you know, because you're one of a very small number of acts.
Yeah.
So, you know, talk to the audience, engage them. With the open mic, I think it's kind of like, you know, let the music do the talking. Thanks very much. Hope I see you again. You know, like I don't usually do the big promo push.
Yeah.
Unless you're in the venue you're playing. Unless you say, hey, I'm playing a gig here next Friday.
Yeah.
That's cool. But don't go promoting other gigs at an open mic. You know, you can talk to people afterwards.
Well, don't go promoting, you know, I mean, there are some instances where promoting other venues at a different venue is okay. Like if you're part of, you know, if it's part of a tour or part of a string of gigs or whatever.
Of course, that's fine.
But you know, it's not good form generally to, you know, if you're just playing pub to pub to pub, to, you know, promote other pubs at a different pub.
Yeah.
You know, essentially encouraging people to not go to the pub that you're playing at that particular time.
Yeah.
Doesn't really sit well.
Come with, to me with another place. This place is shit. Yeah. I get a gig next week in a good venue. Come
That's
there.
Right. That's right. You've tried the rest, now go to the best. Yeah.
Yeah.
I suppose we were talking about this before, that you know, when you're doing live performances for a fair while, you soon realize sort of it doesn't take much. One, it doesn't take much to be professional. And two, when you do the things to be more professional and be that person that other people want to work with, it doesn't actually take a lot of effort to do so, because not many people are doing that. It's the thing with, say, customer service, for instance. You know, there's a lot of people that are working in customer services industries that don't like people. You know, they take the job on because it's easier to get than being a brain surgeon, right? So, you know, when you have... I remember working
think for... Think if they're the only two choice.
That's right. I remember working for a company once that... you know, as part of their customer services manual, you know, they made a big deal about smiling.
Right.
You know, and I'm thinking to myself, that should really be obvious. You know, it's like you can't be doing really, really well if the main way that you set yourself apart from everybody else that works there is the fact that you smile at someone.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It just seems really, really obvious, and
it does. But I know people who don't.
Yeah,
I've played at venues where you go up and talk to somebody.
Yeah,
like, you know, you just walk up to them and say, "Hey," like a staff member.
Yeah, yeah.
And you're like, "Hey, how it's going?" And they're like, "Oh yeah, really, really good."
Yeah.
If you didn't talk to them, you'd go, "Oh, that person is so pissed off."
Yeah.
And they just have a grumpy look on their face the whole day. Like the
entire
day. There
are people that really, there are people that unfortunately have, you know, sort of pissed off bitch face, you know.
Exactly.
In their, when, you know, just their resting.
And, you know, and the problem is that.
And that's unfortunate.
But the problem with that is you need somebody within the organisation to say, you are lovely, because they are. You know, I'm talking about, you will get people who are. They've got resting bitch face, and they're also a bitch, or an arsehole,
or a bastard, or
whatever.
An arsehole,
yeah, whichever one you want.
Yeah.
But like I played at a venue where, you know, the person managing the day looks really upset and annoyed, and then you talk to them and forget and go, oh yeah, that's just how they look. They're not annoyed. That's just the expression on their face is real deadpan.
Yeah,
and so it. I think the funny thing is that it seems obvious, but it's not necessarily.
I suppose.
And you know, the flow on, or a following on from that probably is when you're performing, if you make a mistake, and when you're first starting out, or when you're probably in a pressure situation, if I can spit it out,
yep.
Something that's you know, you're a little bit more tense about it, and you kind of want it to go perfectly. You make a mistake, and you kind of wince. You tense up. You're like, ah. And I learned a long time ago, really.
Yeah.
That it's like that thing when you smile at somebody. Like if you smile at a random stranger, their natural inclination is to smile back.
Yeah.
They mimic your behaviour.
Yeah.
And they see that you're kind of welcoming.
Yeah.
And if you've got audience members watching you, and you make a mistake and you tense up and wince, then you're effectively making them kind of sit back in their seat and feel that tension.
Yes.
So my thing, and I'm giving away my trade secret, is, and it's not always because I've made a mistake. Sometimes I'm thinking about something other than the song, or I see something in the audience that makes me laugh. But I'll generally laugh or smile when I make a mistake.
Yeah.
Because I think if somebody's watching me, they're going to go, what there. And a lot of the time they're not going to notice that I made a mistake.
Yep.
Sometimes it's going to be obvious if you hit a bung note or something like that. You know, you're not looking and you're accidentally slightly off the fret on the guitar and you know, so it's clearly out of tune.
Yeah.
Sometimes you're going to notice.
Yeah.
But a lot of the time they're not going to notice. And if you smile your way through it, it's also saying whether they notice or not. But if they notice, it's like, he doesn't care. He's cool.
Yeah.
It's all good.
It's all a matter of confidence, isn't it? I mean...
Well, yeah, confidence builds confidence, as they say.
I think Jacob Collier once said that there's no such thing as wrong notes, just a lack of confidence. And it's like, well, some notes are more wrong than others, I suppose, if you look at it on, sort of a music theory spectrum. But no, theoretically, I mean, you can play any note against anything. If you've got the confidence to play it, then it doesn't matter. But, I mean, that's a very big lesson. And I, about what you've just said, I would add that you would, one thing I learned very early on in the piece is that you never, ever, ever apologise on stage for anything.
To the audience, yeah.
To the audience.
Yeah.
And to the point that if something happens, you either just keep going as if it never happened or really make a big deal in a joking way, depending on... Yes. Depending on the crowd, you get a feel for that. Like, say, for instance, maybe you play a wrong chord somewhere or whatever, and it's just like at the end, if you're playing with somebody else, you can turn to them and say, you like that thing? You like that chord I did there? A bit of jazz, or whatever, something will come to you, and it as long as the audience can see that doesn't worry you, doesn't worry them, it's like, whatever.
Yeah.
It's all good.
I mean, I was going to say the only caveat to that is that if you have like if you're playing a pub or a winery or whatever and you have a technical glitch, which I had at a gig a couple of weeks ago, and my guitar stopped working and I was just like, so in that situation, obviously say, sorry about this, I've just got a bit of a glitch here. Just,
oh, that's
I'm going to chuck a song on for a minute I'll be right back with
different.
You. And then nobody...
String breaks, you got to... I've had to cut sets short because, my string broke. So it's like, okay, all right, guys, my apologies, can't play with five strings. I'll do a few more songs in the next set, but I need to put this on. Or whatever, it's like you work something out and everyone's like, oh, yeah, cool. Whatever.
The bass player in Disneyland After Dark, DAD, had only had two strings on his bass.
He did, yeah.
That being said, it was only a two-string bass.
It was like only two-string bass.
The neck was even
it was a very thin, down. Very thin neck, very, very thin neck. But I tell you what, he'd be buggered if that one of the strings broke. He'd be like, that African dude. What's he called? Bushy One String or something like that. He plays this one string guitar and sings about chickens and stuff like that. It's a YouTube meme thing.
But I was going to say
two string bass. God.
Well, I was going to say the, when you were talking about before
big amount
in terms
of choice.
Of,
a big amount of choice is to...
Yes.
I don't think there'd be much slapping going on.
No.
Maybe some thumb work, but, yeah.
Easy bass lines.
Yeah, I suppose. Root note one.
Can you play something complicated? No. I've only got two strings.
Oh, it's like you're just one guy with an acoustic guitar and someone, comes up and asks you to, if you know the latest sort of orchestrally based hip hop song, it's like, dude, I'm just one guy with a guitar.
Yeah.
You expect me to know that? It's like,
oh, I get some cracking requests at times. But, we've spoken about how to deal
We have.
I don't know what episode that was, but we have.
I was way back in the first series, how to deal with, do you know how to play Beyonce and other stupid questions? I think that was the title. I tell you, it's worth having a listen. Go back in the archives, dear listener, and find that. And we're both in fine form with rock horror stories, but this is not a rock horror story episode.
But I was going to say when you were talking about well, not apologising to the audience. I was thinking the other thing is if you're in a band, this is just for the musicians in the room. Yeah. But if you're in a band and you make a mistake, make sure you turn around and like glare at one of the other musicians and then like shake your head as if it was their fault. And you can sort that out later in rehearsals.
Yeah.
It's just like, why did you look at me and glare? Or, you know, look at the one who's not looking at you.
Yeah.
Like, just like pull a face and, you know, because they don't know where it's coming from. They don't know which instrument it came out of.
Sure.
We normally make a joke out of things like that sometimes between the song. I think there was one show at the Fringe where I just, you know, said it casually, not as an apology to the audience and not necessarily as strictly as an apology to you. It's just kind of like, yeah, sorry about the extra chorus I put in there. And you're like, no, I think I like that arrangement better.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, but it was just, you know, because, you know, there was a glitch kind of in the matrix.
Yeah, it wasn't a serious thing, but yeah.
It probably wasn't noticeable. But that's the other thing is have fun with it if you're in that situation. Because, look, at the end of the day, if you're good at what you do, and hopefully you are, good enough to step out on a stage in the first place. And we're not necessarily talking about the open mics in this stage. Open mics are really a place where people can kind of find their...
Yeah, find their feet.
Feet, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I played open mics for a year before I played my first proper gig and thought, why did I wait so long? Because my first proper gig was only like a 30-minute set in amongst a bunch of other acts. And I think I mentioned this on the podcast before. It was between two death metal bands and I was standing up there playing acoustic guitar. But they really got into it and were like, you know, really brave to kind of do that, stand up there like that. But, an open mic is a real proving ground. And, you know, if you get to the next kind of stage, hopefully you've kind of got a bit more professionalism. And I can't even remember what I was going to say about that. because I segued myself.
You segued into the death metal sandwich.
I'll remember it in a minute. Don't worry about that. Well, there's a possibility I won't remember it.
Oh, dear. Well, open mics are a great way for people to, as you say, you know, get a start, or if you are established and you've written some new material and you want to try it on. I mean, it's like comedians, you know. I mean, big-time comedians sometimes go to the small clubs and try out their new material.
Oh, absolutely.
You know.
Yeah.
And it's good for them and it's also good for the audience as well. So, you know, why can't it be the same for music, you know?
I remember what I was going to say, by the way.
Well, say it.
I was going to say that...
By all means.
If you are at that stage where you've progressed to doing your own gigs, hopefully you're upholding a... you know, professional standard, and you're doing everything you can to put in a great performance.
Yeah.
You know, the reason for not apologising is because the audience are hopefully on your side. You know, your job is to get them on side and get them having a good time, no matter what the gig is. And they're not sitting there trying to nitpick.
No.
You know, I mean, obviously comedians is a good example because obviously people, their environment is very different because they're obviously... you know, they have that combative kind of interaction with the audience and some of them, you know, want the audience to challenge them. You know, Jimmy Carr's a classic. He likes that, you know, the comebacks. You know, that's his thing. But the audience, you know, they're not the enemy. But moving beyond that for a bit in terms of, I think with the pub gigs, and this is partly the way I do things and partly what I've heard from people, you know, who deal with other acts, even from venues that have kind of given me, I guess, feedback on the way I do things versus some of the other people. And the pub winery type gigs in Australia, at least, you're generally kind of 3 45-minute sets over 3 hours as an approximate measure. 40 to 45-minute sets. That's generally the kind of rule.
Yeah.
You were talking about I think we might be talking about it at the start, but I mean, maybe we were talking about it before we started. But I mean, you know, rocking up on time, you know, so you're set and ready to go when the yeah. clock strikes, whatever the start time is.
Yeah.
And, you know, I can get to a gig, I can literally get to a gig 20 minutes. Like, I've got it down to a fine art in the recent years. I used to get to gigs an hour beforehand. I used to just like to kind of set up and kind of settle. And now I prefer to kind of, I usually get about half an hour before, depending yeah. on how hard the access to the venue is. If it's a new venue, it's more like an hour because I want to get the lay of the land, chat to the staff, you know, where am I setting up, you know, blah, blah, blah. But I've had gigs where I've got caught in traffic and I've been there 20 minutes beforehand and I'll start on time.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, obviously that's kind of important to start on time. Finishing on time, not so much. Half the time they'll be happy if you play longer because you're playing for nothing. It's the interesting thing is I'm going to just turn the camera back on. Excuse that. Charlie wants to make an appearance on the camera. We should have to.
That's all right. You can, if you know, once the video of this podcast episode comes out, you'll see quite a regal and magnificent profile of Charlie the Studio Grudel. Lovely. Oh, that's all right. He wants to get in on the action too. So what were you saying, Simon? You were saying you were getting there 20 minutes beforehand.
Yeah, I was going to say, if I had a dog and you had a dog, we could just have them sitting in front of the microphones and that could be the promo shot.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I've got cats and that would not end well.
No, Charlie doesn't like cats.
But we could do it separate. Like we could take Photoshop. One half and then we could have to, yeah.
Photoshop saves the day.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's interesting. Like there's getting there on time and my thing is if you're starting out and you're meant to play, a 45-minute set, and if you do the maths, it'll basically be that one of your breaks has to be 25 minutes and one of your breaks has to be 20 minutes
mm-hmm.
to start. So over 3 hours, three 45-minute sets, that's the amount of time you're going to have in those two breaks. My suggestion is when you're first starting out, stick as closely to those times as possible.
Yeah.
But you can be a little bit more, in my opinion, a little bit more flexible when you've got a few more runs on the board. And the reason why I say that is that, or also in the way you conduct yourself. So what I've heard from some people is that, you know, you'll get people who order food, you know, in their break.
Mm-hmm.
It's like eat on your own time.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? The break in your set isn't for you to sit down and have a meal or order a meal. It takes 20 minutes to be ready. Then you sit down and eat it.
Yeah.
And say, this is my lunch. It's like, no.
So what about if you order the food to come out in time for your second break or something like that?
I mean, my general opinion is that you're only working for 3 hours.
Yes.
If somebody goes to a 9-to-5 job, they get one break between when they start and when they go to lunch at probably one.
Mm-hmm.
You're working for 3 hours.
Yeah.
My opinion is if you want to eat, if they offer you a meal, eat it before you start, so before your start time, or if you know, or get it when you finish and eat it afterwards, mm-hmm. or you know, take it home with you. Like a pizza or something like that.
Oh, okay.
If it's a place, you know, I play pizza bars and stuff. But my theory is it's
also too that would depend on the times because sometimes it wouldn't be possible to have food ready to take home or to eat when you're done because it's outside of the kitchen.
Of course, yeah. So
I mean, it would depend on the
on
the venue.
Yeah, if a place offers a meal as part of the package. I've played venues where they've offered a meal and basically my gig, yeah, as you say, by the time I finish, the kitchen will be closed. So what I've done in those situations is actually I basically got a pizza. I've eaten some of it.
Mm-hmm.
I've got there early to set up.
Yeah.
And like in some situations, really early. I mean, the situation I'm thinking of, I was away somewhere, so I had a hotel to go and check into and stuff. But yeah, I'll eat some food beforehand. Mm-hmm. It's a pizza, and then I'll eat the rest later. But I'll eat on my time. I mean, it's a bit like drinking. I mean, I don't drink alcohol, so it's a little bit different for me. Some people find they need a beer to kind of calm the nerves. I don't drink, so I don't really have – I shouldn't have firm opinions on that. But I kind of also think, you know, you probably should do that after you finish playing.
Mm.
I know there's the kind of, you know, the rock god kind of – thing of guys getting pissed on stage.
But that's well and truly gone, though.
It's,
I mean, Ock Health and Safety had put a kibosh to that anyway, because the way that the way that a venue would look at a as at the hired help who was doing the entertaining is that for that particular period of time they would be part of their public liability, and therefore they would be classed as, you know, temporary staff. And so if the staff aren't allowed to drink, well, then neither are you.
Yeah.
And
Big concerts obviously being different, because the headlining act are paying for the public liability insurance. And
for sure. It's
the Axl Roses of the world and those kind of people. It's a different kettle of fish. But, yeah, look, I think I just go, I mean, my thing is, name me a time where you can't go 3 hours without eating, you know. Some gigs are 4 hours, so 4 hours. But, you know, if your gig's 12 to 4, it's just like, well, eat something, eat a breakfast at 11 or something.
Yeah.
So my thing is just don't eat. Mm. I mean, it's a great diet plan, I guess,
sure,
to do it that way. But, look, I have places that offer me food. I either take it after if I can. And sometimes if they say the kitchen's going to close, I say, well, can you make me a pizza and just put it in a box? And if it's cold, I'll just eat it cold. Like I'll still have it. A lot of people look at it and go, a break is a break. You know, they've got 20 minutes and 25 minutes. And you see it all the time. If I go to watch other people play, you know, they might have a table of their mates there. They might go off and talk on their phone or play on their phone, sit in the corner. They might have a beer on their break,
mm-hmm,
or sit down and have a drink. They do it, you know, they're having a break.
Yes.
And, you know, that is completely and utterly up to them if they want to conduct themselves in that way. My thing is that literally from the moment I walk into the venue until the moment I walk out of the venue, I'm working. Mm. So obviously I'm setting up, and people might come and talk to me, and it's like, if I'm obviously rushed to set up, you know, they talk to me too much, and I just need to get set up and, hey, I'll come and talk to you in my break. But certainly my breaks. Now, I hand out cards to everybody, or at least offer cards to everybody in the audience. So I go around tables and stuff like that and have a chat, say hi. The reason why I started doing that was when I was playing with Brendan Keane back in the day, we played our first ever gig, actually, which you got up and played with us, was at the Crown and Scepter.
Crown and Scepter, yeah.
That
was going back a few years.
Yeah, after the first song, Brendan leant over to me and said, what have we done wrong? Because the crowd weren't clapping. And I was thinking, dude, I said to him, mate, we're going to have to do more than one song to get an Adelaide crowd to clap. And, you know, they did clap
also
eventually.
Also, too, Brendan was from Ireland.
Yeah,
That's the main reason
he was asking for us,
you know, you play a song and all you hear is crickets in Adelaide is normal, but for someone in Ireland, you come from Ireland, in which, you know, you fart in the microphone and everyone sort of jumps up and down in absolute glee.
Well, it is so, I mean, and certainly back then, before the days of smartphones and distraction.
Sure.
It was... it was chalk and cheese. So my first gig in Ireland, I went, oh, now I understand why he was so confused.
Yeah.
Because it was just completely the opposite. In Adelaide, if somebody claps, everybody looks at them and goes, the fuck's your problem? Why are you clapping? They've only done one song.
Mm.
You know.
You must be his mate.
Yeah. In Ireland, if you don't clap, they'll threaten to take you outside and give you a good hiding for not respecting the artist.
Yeah.
It's a very different, you know, cultural norm.
Yeah.
But when I came back to Adelaide, that first gig was hard because, you know, I'd been travelling all around Ireland and playing, and it was like, oh my God, back to this. And I guess I had a story to tell people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you could go up to people and go, oh, I just got back from Ireland and, you know, back here. And suddenly you had a conversation going. But I thought, I've got to have a way to engage with people. So I thought, I'm going to do a business card that I can go and give to people. Because I'm not the most confident person in the world. People will kind of go, you're really confident. You just go up and talk to random people. And it's like, yeah, because I'm the guy playing music in the corner and I've got a card to give them. I don't go up into random people in random pubs and go, hi, I'm Simon. I'm petrified of that kind of stuff. I'm very shy.
Yeah.
I can go to a party and I look around the room and go, oh, I know those people, but they're having a conversation. I don't want to interrupt their conversation. I know those people, but they're having a conversation. If I'm in the conversation and I see somebody who knows, I'm like, hey, how you doing? Come over here. But when I'm on the outside, I'm always like, oh, they probably don't want me interrupting. So I'm very shy in that regard still, kind of awkwardly shy.
Mm-hmm.
So I did these cards so I could go and talk to people. And it basically opened the audience up. Suddenly they were on my side. I wasn't the guy in the corner anymore who said he was Simon through a microphone.
Yeah.
Hey, Simon, he came and spoke to us and, you know, we know where he lives because we asked him, well, where are you from? And they, you know, where are you? Are you guys local? You know, when I'm talking to people. And often you'll get tourists and you'll get people who, if it's a winery, they may be locals or they might have travelled from a long way away. You know, you get all sorts of interesting conversations with people. You never know where those conversations are going to go. They just go off in all sorts of tangents. Sometimes it's like, hey, look, I'm really enjoying chatting to you guys, but I've got to go and play my next set. Mm. So I'm working through every single break I have, and sometimes for an hour after I finish playing, you know, I won't have packed up yet because I'll still be talking to people. And so what I was talking about was that you should stick to your breaks.
Yeah.
But see, what I do now is my first break is normally longer.
Yeah.
My first break will be longer and my last break will probably be shorter because I will have spoken to a lot of people who are there.
Yeah.
And I try to get round to as many as possible in the first break. And in the second break, there's not as many new people usually.
Yeah.
You haven't replaced your entire audience. So you go and talk to the few extras and then you play your last set. And the thing is that, you know, I've had owners of venues comment on how great that is.
Mm-hmm.
But I was trying to think of how that looks visually. And I go, I work for 3 hours. Somebody else works for 45 minutes and then sits down and has a break.
Yeah.
Then works for 40 to 45 minutes, then has a break.
Yeah.
I don't stop from at half an hour before I start, mm-hmm. where I'm setting up and people might come and talk to me.
To about half hour or
to at least at least an hour afterwards.
Yeah.
And
well, that's true.
And then my long-suffering wife, you know, she will say, oh, you finish at this time, and she works out how long it'll take me to get home, and she's like, you won't be home for at least, you know, if it takes an hour to get home, you won't be home for at least 2 hours after your gig. Yeah. If I get home, like, quickly, she's like, what's going on? Like,
were there no one there?
Yeah, it's a bit like I played a gig in Strath, which is 10 minutes down the road from my house. And, you know, I'd spoken to everybody in the venue.
Mm.
And when I finished, you know, most of the people were kind of like, yeah, cool, thanks very much. And it was kind of time to go home because it was a later finishing gig.
Yeah.
So I packed up really quickly. The car was like literally right outside the door, chucked all the gear in the car, 10 minutes to home. I was home like 25 minutes after the gig finished, probably.
Yeah.
And she was like, what happened? And I was like, nothing. I just got in the car and came home. But sometimes there's a conversation to be had. You know, somebody wants to talk to you. They came late and they didn't get a chance to have a chat, and, you know, they're interested in having a conversation. And
yeah.
it's not my job to – I'm as you know, and anybody who's listened to the podcast knows that I can talk.
Yes.
But the thing is, so I can get into a conversation, but quite often the people having the conversation with me are just as talkative.
Yeah.
And you get two chatty people together. It's like you and I. Ooh. Swept of essence.
I didn't know how loud that was going to be.
Hang on.
Now we have...
fizzy water.
We have...
sparkling or still? Well, Corey's definitely a sparkling man.
I'm definitely a sparkling guy.
Still.
We've got a whole, you know, section of the audience all now wanting to go to the toilet. Oh, I think I need to go have a wee or something.
Or they want more of that.
They want more of that, yeah.
What's that?
Oh, ASMR.
ASMR, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I don't get that, but it doesn't affect me in that way, unfortunately.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, you know, it's like you hear this whoosh, and all of a sudden you get a stiffy. It's like, oh.
I don't think it's like that. Some people just use it so they can sleep better.
Oh, no, people use it for that reason too.
Oh, well, I'm sure they do, but there's you know, it's a whole range of topics, let's say.
Yeah.
But, yeah, look, I mean, my thing is it's not necessarily that I think I was saying before, like, what I've found is you talk to the audience, and as I said, I've become Simon more than just the guy in the corner.
Yes.
And so what happens is sometimes people will clap more after they know who I am.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you've connected with them.
Well, it's that essence of familiarity, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah,
and,
yeah.
You know, like, I'll go over to people. So if I'm playing first set and there's one table that claps,
yeah,
that's the first table I'm going to.
Of course.
So I go to them and say, thanks so much for clapping. And you know, just that's a way to kind of break the ice. But, yeah, you find more people will clap. And I'll find that firstly, I would say 95% of people that I go up to are happy to see you, happy to have a chat, happy you came and said hi,
yeah,
welcoming, thanks so much, really enjoying the music. You know, some of them will, you know, ask about, oh, you do some original stuff, and maybe didn't realise I was doing 50% original stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Some people, you know, want to talk about that. Some people ask... you know, might comment on the covers you've done. David Gray, I get a lot of comments about David Gray.
Yeah.
That they like hearing it, but they like the way I do it as well, which is nice. But then you obviously get, sometimes you get some requests. But most people are happy to chat to you. Mm. Occasionally you get people who are, you know, they're either not interested in talking to you or they're shy, you know, and they'll be just like, thanks. You know, you can usually tell the ones that are a bit kind of pissed off. You know, they're just like grumpy kind of people.
Mm-hmm.
You see less of them in wineries than you do in pubs.
Yeah.
And they're just a bit more gruff. But I mean, I play a pizza bar where everybody's sitting down to dinner, and everybody in there's. I don't know if I've ever had a gruff table. You know, they're always pretty friendly. So it's a great way to break the ice. It's a great way to you know, introduce people to kind of what you're doing. And
yeah.
In my case, or our case, is we're doing something beyond playing in wineries. We're writing songs, and we want to introduce people to that.
So I suppose the lesson that you've learned over your time of playing is that people aren't that scary, and the importance of always being on, you know, from start to finish.
Always, yep.
Because, well,
it's your job.
That's right. But you also get the feedback from the the people that run the venue, for instance. You know, they notice. You know, people notice those small things.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. It's like a trade secret, but. It's not a secret to any musician who's ever been to my gig, you know. I mean, so you know, there's been other musicians who've come to my gig, so it's not like I'm kind of holding, you know, it's not like I'm letting people into a secret club or anything.
Yeah.
I mean, I just go, this is the way to conduct yourself. You're there to do a job, and what are you trying to achieve by doing your job? And it's like, it's a perfect opportunity. You've just played to these people. It's a perfect opportunity to go and have a chat to them.
Yeah.
You know, if they don't want to chat.
Well, it's extending the communication, and it's not up to you to, you know, I suppose it's up to you to continue that communication. It's up to them to let you know that, no, I'm quite happy with just the relationship of you being on stage and me being the audience. You know, if they want more, well, then they'll engage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's better. See, this is the interesting thing is, you know, like if you're up on stage and somebody, you know, something... You can have it. Something can happen where I'm just trying to think of an example, but you know, there'll be occasion when you start talking to the audience.
Yeah.
You know, you address a member of the audience. They are much more uncomfortable with that than you going up in a break and talking to them.
Mm.
Because when you talk to them when you're on stage, everybody turns around and looks at them.
Yes.
You've drawn attention to them.
Yes. Yes.
Nobody gives two shits what I'm doing in my break. Right? They don't honestly. Mm. So they're not looking at me talking to another table. Sometimes people, I'll have two tables close together and I'll give one table my default, you know, spiel.
Yeah.
When I go up with a card and explain about Soul Trader and, you know, I do these gigs in pubs by myself where I'm doing a mix. You know, we only do original stuff.
Yeah.
You know, I have a default spiel. I'm like a cracked record. But it's just easier to kind of go.
But it's a crack record to different people. If you were saying that to the same person all the time,
that'd be different. Exactly.
Yeah.
And I've had people at the next table go, "Yeah, oh, I heard what you said. Yeah, that sounds great. Yeah, cool. I have a card, you know." And then I might still have a conversation with them. But yeah, it's just a default kind of. It's a script, effectively, but it's just a compact kind of sentence.
Yeah.
Like title of a podcast. It's a compact little statement I can make. That summarizes what I'm giving them and what it's about, and then if they want to have a conversation off the back of that, you know, they can, and it just, you know, see where the kind of conversation kind of goes. And as I said, some are fascinating. I mean,
yeah.
I have some great conversations with people where it's just kind of like, I'll be happy to pull up a chair and sit down and just talk to you guys.
Yeah,
exactly. And you can never pick it. You can never pick who the person who wants to have a chat is.
Mm.
Sometimes you go up to a bunch of young people who, you know, they look all hip and trendy. You know, they look like kind of, you know, the cool kids.
Yeah.
And you're thinking, these cool kids aren't going to want to talk to me. They're going to want me to play Wonderwall. They're going to want this. They're going to want that. If you start thinking like that, you'll avoid people.
Yeah.
I'll go up to a table like that and they'll go, that's fucking brilliant. Like, love your covers. Love your voice. Brilliant. Just keep doing what you're doing, man. Love it. And then you go, oh, wow, okay. And then sometimes you go up to a table and think, oh, this would be a pretty chill table. And then they're just, can you play this song? Can you play this song? And it's like,
yeah,
you know, you can never pick, even by watching the personalities, and I watch people, obviously you do it as well probably, when you're playing a set, you can kind of, you're observing your audience, you're seeing the interactions.
Mm-hmm.
But,
yeah,
I just think that, you know, I'm on for that time, staff comment, about it, you know, look, they basically say nobody else does that.
Yeah.
And,
I mean, that would set you apart from everybody else that's on their roster, which is important because, you know, you get the gigs back. I suppose in summary...
And now I've told everybody and now everybody's going to be doing it and they'll say, everybody's doing that.
Well, the thing is that they won't, though.
Yeah.
They won't, you know.
Well, look, I actually talked to somebody at a gig recently who was a musician and he said, if I'm only getting paid $300... He said, I'm not going to be given 100%. I'm just going to do my sets and then get out of there. And I was kind of like, that's...
Well, see, that's you see, you know, I think you and I look at it for, you know, we're looking at the long game, whereas, you know, there are a number of musicians that just look at it as a short-term gain, you know. But it just depends on how you see that particular gig. You know, if you're looking at a gig as a means to fill up a calendar rather than the stepping stone towards the development of what it is that your goals are, you know, you're going to look at those gigs in a different light.
Yeah.
But I suppose in summary of all this, I mean, what have, you know, what would be the summary of what the both of us, you know, have learned, you know, over our time sort of playing music? Now, first of all, I suppose the first thing is what you've just said about, you know, always being on. It's like you're clocking on, clocking off within that particular period of time between when you start and when you finish. You're always on. So always, you know, have that, you know, create the opportunities within that. Also to look at the game that you play in terms of, you know, doing the gigs, the music industry itself, look at it as a long, you know, more of a long game rather than just the short-term thing. Never say sorry for anything, you know. If you
make a mistake on stage.
Make a mistake, just whatever.
Laugh it off, move on.
It's all about confidence.
Yep.
And I suppose, I mean, another big thing that I've learnt is that, you know, I mean, we're all human.
Yeah.
We're all human and we all want to experience something. We all want to be, you know, validated, acknowledged, communicated with, you know, noticed, whatever. From watching, I mean, especially watching you doing what you do, it's like people aren't that scary. I used to have this thing of, you know, and you would have seen that in the podcast episode that we were talking about before, you know, do you know Beyonce and other stupid questions,
mm-hmm.
you know. I used to think, and I still do to a degree, but, you know, if hecklers pay out, you know, if a heckler pays out a comedian, well, then it's open slather. You know, that comedian is just going to town and just really sort of getting them down. And I thought, well, as a musician, I should be able to have the same gravitas to do that. It's probably one of the reasons why I wasn't getting gigs back, because I could be quite brutal, and it's like I've softened in my attitude about that now. It's like you know, we're all human, and we just need to be treated the way that we want to be treated, I suppose.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, on that point, and not to kind of go on about it, but I mean, because I have always done the 50% originals, 50% covers, I don't get too many people, I don't get constant requests. Like if I was a human jukebox just playing covers, I would expect to get a lot more requests shouted at me, a lot more obscure songs,
yes.
because I'm basically saying to people, I play songs by other people. Whereas what I'm advertising is, and people say, if they request a song and they go, oh, you don't know that one. I said, well, look, my main focus is around my original stuff and I tend to play songs that fit in with my original stuff and suit my voice and, you know, and they kind of go, oh, yeah, that's understandable. Yeah, no worries. You know, sometimes I have people go, they'll request a song. I say, oh, I don't know that one. And they go, that's cool, man. Keep doing what you're doing. It sounds great.
Mm.
And it's like because I've set a different precedent, I've kind of, you know, stepped out of
trying to be all things to all people.
Well, yeah.
Which just burns you out.
And I've just said, I'm not a human jukebox. That's not what I'm here for. Yeah. I'm not here just for your entertainment. I'm here to introduce myself to you and expose you to my music.
Mm.
That's a different reason for being here. And I'm here to introduce you to something new. You know, do you want to, and you know, like it's like if you were doing a sales pitch,
yeah.
Do you want to experience something new and different? I don't know. Yeah, tell me about it.
Mm.
That's what I'm doing.
Yeah.
So it's slightly different. I was going to say you were talking about, you know, being nice to people and stuff like that and just I think being kind of kind and things like that. I was thinking one more thing is with the support gigs, if you're sound checking, get your sound check done as quickly as you can, as sufficiently as you can. Don't piss the engineer off because he's doing his best and you haven't done the gig yet.
Mm.
You know, if you have an issue with him, talk to him about it afterwards and say, hey, look, I wasn't quite happy with that, how that was sounding, just for next time. You know, just wanted to let you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Something to work on. Wasn't quite getting what I wanted out of that. Just, you know, wanted to pass that on. Don't piss him off before the gig. It's like don't piss off the guy who's making your hamburger because you don't know what he's going to put in it.
Yeah.
But also I've played gigs where the headline act sound checks first and then you sound check as the support act and then you play.
Yeah.
You know, you do it that way around.
Mm-hmm.
And the headline act has gone, I'm just going to use that all the time. I'm going to sound check up until the point where that guy's going to be playing and people are going to be let in, so he can't sound check.
Mm-hmm.
Because then he'll sound shit and I'll sound better.
Mm-hmm.
And he leaves you like 2 minutes. And my thing is I walk up there and go, my guitar working? Yeah, I can hear it. My voice working? Yeah, I can hear it. Let's go.
Just do a line, and they just go, line check.
Literally a line check. Because I go, I don't need anything more than a line check, especially if it's me solo.
Yeah.
I go, I can hear my guitar. I can hear my voice. I'm going to smash this. I'm going to be better than you with all your extra stuff you've got. And I didn't need to sound check.
Mm.
So you're not going to shake me.
Yeah.
You know, I wasn't born yesterday. But if you're in the position of, you know, don't mess around with other people, I don't think it's advisable to do that.
Yeah.
Because it just comes off as being bad. There's always going to be people who notice, you know, the gig I'm particularly thinking of, the engineer was like, what a wanker this other guy is, you know. And it's just like,
yeah.
And they're like, you were great, fantastic, sounded brilliant, you know. You were so easy to work with.
Yeah. Be that guy. Be that person that you're easy to work with.
What do they say? And be the change you want to see in others?
Yeah. I don't know what that's a Gandhi from. Quote, yeah. But the number one rule, about working in the music industry is just be easy to deal with.
So if you ever
another big lesson.
If you see Corey and I at a gig,
yeah.
and we're giving somebody grief or we're not being easy to deal with, come up and have a word to us
and say, I listened to your podcast.
I was one of those listeners who listened to that episode where you said be nice to everybody. If you're at one of my gigs and I don't get a chance to speak to you, I do try to go around and speak to most people. I'm always really disappointed when I don't get to talk to somebody and then they leave, but, you know, it happens.
Yeah.
But, yeah, look, I mean, I hope some of this has been useful to somebody or, you know, and I think, it applies to anything in life. I mean, my thing has always been with work is give it 110%. Just go above and beyond in whatever you're doing because it builds character.
Yeah.
And you will take that to the next job.
Yeah.
Whatever it is. So it really does apply to anybody is the things of being nice to people and communicate and be on time and, you know, go above and beyond.
Yeah. Really simple things.
Even if it's not respected in your current job, you're building yourself for your next job where it will matter.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, if you're not a musician, it can be applied anywhere.
Yep.
But, yeah, thanks for listening. This is kind of flowing by. I was going to go, we should have a shorter episode. No, longer. And Charlie is now, I think, sound asleep on the couch, which is awesome.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
He's been a good boy.
It's been fun. So we'll do it all again next week, I reckon.
Absolutely.
All right.
Ciao for now.
See ya.
You have been listening to the Soul Trader podcast, music, creativity, and other plans with your hosts, Simon James Betts and Corey Stewart. Be sure to check out soultradermusic.com and CoreyStewartOnline.com. See you next time.